This podcast includes unapologetic logic and reason and may not be suitable for all audiences. In a world full of nonsense, he's been called the voice of uncommon common sense. He sees the abnormal that many find normal. Author and award-winning speaker, he is Chris.
You know that every year there's thousands of whistleblowers that come forward to speak about things that are going on in our government. Some of them, amazing atrocities. Whatever happens to those whistleblowers? You ever wondered? Occasionally you hear about one or two here or there, but nothing really considering the magnitude of what's going on. What really is going on? Well, I'm here to tell you about it. I've got some experience with this. 14 years working in the bowels of our government, being a whistleblower myself, and my own story. And that's not my focus. My focus is that I found that there's a huge repetitive pattern to this. So many of us, especially veterans, that are targeted and attacked for doing the right thing. And it's happening all over the place. But the bigger story is, what is being concealed within our government and why is it not being revealed? Until now, it hasn't been. Today, I'm going to give you a little glimpse. And that's a big reason why I do this podcast. At the end of the day, this is just me giving my opinion. I do my research. I do my reading. Huge volumes, you know, way more than anybody else. I'm kidding about that. You know, everybody's doing a lot of research, looking at what they have. I don't have some giant department. I'm not going to. Basically, what I'm saying is I offer my opinion on things, and some people are going to agree, some people not. But the reason why I do this is to try to get people just to really look at what's going on for real, the truth of the matter, and make a decision on their own. I can't make up anybody's mind, and I don't intend to. Let's get into it. I don't know about you, but you'd like to think that the idea of a whistleblower being protected would be something that we would all agree on, right? That it would not be political. That would say, look, in order for there to be a properly ordered government, that there needs to be a certain level of transparency, especially when it comes to wrongdoing. And it's necessary in order to protect the common good and mass-scale crimes that seem to be going on, really. And not my words either, by the way. I'll get more into that. I wanted to just throw this at you as an example of how backwards things are. I don't know that people are very aware of this. Protections that are offered to whistleblowers, I want to talk about that, but it's talk about razor thin. Actually, you're opening yourself up to a huge problem. And I'm doing some interviews right now, Veterans Administration whistleblowers. And the language that was being used is exactly what I'm giving you from my own experience. Becomes a retaliatory process. I'll get into this, but I want to just give you this little detail here that I think is going to blow your mind. I don't know. I think I'm a reasonable person. I look at this, I say, this is a little strange to me when I look at what's not protected. They'll protect illegal immigrants, people here on work visas, for victims of certain crimes. Well, I suppose there's a rationale to that, right? But that you don't want somebody being retaliated against that's in such a vulnerable position. And so they offer this whistleblower protection program. Now, I'm not going to take a position on that. I suppose you could argue that it's good. You could argue that there's consequences to that. You deal with the immigration issue first. I'm not so sure. You know, if somebody comes across the border illegally, it doesn't mean that they become subject to whatever crimes anybody wants to commit on them. I don't believe I'm ready to go there. So I think that some level of protection is good, but then how's it getting paid for? And, you know, what are we really talking about when we get into the details? But forget about all that a second. I bring it up for this reason. Why is there a whistleblower protection program for the I'll just say immigrants in this case, because it could be a visa situation that was here legally and got tied up, like, as a victim to a crime. And, you know, it could be lots of consequences and angles to that and liability. You don't know, right? These things get sticky. But the point is they're offering a whistleblower protection program for them specifically, but none for me, none for any Veterans Administration whistleblower. I'm not a Veterans Administration whistleblower, but just by way of example, I say that. There's no whistleblower. And I think people are misguided to think, oh, you're protected under the whistleblower laws. Oh, I'm going to tell you a little bit about that. You could say it's protection. I'm not sure that I would say that it is at all. Just my opinion. I don't know. I'm going to share with you what it is, and you can decide for yourself on that. So that's the first thing I would say, really. Just the there's no whistleblower protection program. But ironically enough, and by the way, let me just spell this out a little more to you, what exactly is going on, just so you understand how out of balance this is, okay? You decide for yourself. That whistleblower protection program gives additional protections to immigrants. Like I said, in this case, not necessarily illegal, but not necessarily citizens either, okay? Fine. But they're doing that so that they can prosecute or persecute, depending on the situation, I suppose you could say, individuals and private corporations. Okay, well, I mean, if there's individuals and private corporations that are guilty of wrongdoing, I suppose that that's what government is in place for. Fair enough. But when it comes to revealing the wrongdoings of government, there's no such program. Wouldn't you think that there would be an even stronger program for government military? And it doesn't work that way at all. And I want to tell you a little bit about the way veterans think about this, the way military guys are looking at this. And I think probably most of the people listen to this. I don't know. Our listens are really up. This bears repeating, I think. I have another podcast, a radio show, a book tour, my fourth book, which is available at projectchaos.org. And I'll tell you something else, guys. Well, first of all, it's really taking off. And if you get a chance, even if you've already visited projectchaos.org, and I'm guessing most of our listeners already have gone over there at this point, but I made a huge upgrade to that thing. Then the videos are so cool. You got to go check it out. It will inspire you, all of it. It's just really cool what we got going on over there. I'm so proud of it, so inspired by it myself, so motivated. But in the process of that, I've been getting to talk to a lot of veterans, and some of them are whistleblowers. And even the ones that aren't whistleblowers, I find a very familiar pattern in the way things are discussed. But they'll tell you that the way veterans think, and we have a duty to not be complicit in wrongdoing by not opening our mouth. And that's a huge shift in thinking to what I see going on in some of these organizations. Now, to be fair, sometimes there's veterans involved in the retaliation as well. But let me give you a couple things to digest here, okay? So, you know, what are we really talking about, all right? Well, the whistleblower laws protect. It's not just for government. It could be big corporations. It could be small organizations, whatever. But, you know, it's supposed to provide protection if somebody reports a violation of the law, that they're protected from any retaliation. What does that mean in practical terms? Well, here where I'm at, what it means in practical terms is that if my employer retaliates in any way, including my dismissal, that I can go file a lawsuit. And I can go two directions. One, I was improperly fired. Here, this is a right to not a right to work state, whatever it's called. They can, you know, they don't have any obligation to get fired for any reason whatsoever. So that's a tough one. So now you're going to file a lawsuit under the whistleblower law to say, hey, they fired me because I exposed this information, which is in direct conflict with the law that says that you can be fired for any reason or no reason. And there becomes the problem. Now, those lawsuits are very often won. But here's the problem. As an employee, you do that, you blow the whistle, you become unemployed, now you got to get a lawyer. And it could be a 3-year process to settle that. In the meantime, if you go back to work, the claim becomes pretty much worthless because there's no damages at that point. Long and short of that, if you don't understand what I'm saying, is that there's very little protection. And the legal protection that you have is a joke. And there's no agency. They're not going to come to your rescue. So I got to get my own lawyer. Uh-huh. Yeah, you're going to have to do it all yourself. There's nobody to come help you with any of this. And it's disturbing. You think about, you know, really vile things going on in our government. and somebody has some really big. Now, sometimes they get organizations and law firms, I really don't know, that'll step in and protect those individuals in those situations. But you're throwing darts. So maybe you're going to go get that protection in advance. I don't know what happens on that. But the bottom line is that the whistleblower laws, and there's some difference from state to state. You've got the federal law, of course, and I don't know all of them, but they're horrible. And I think anybody with any real knowledge and experience would say the same thing to you, that, you know what, it's not good to be a whistleblower. I just had this interview for VA whistleblowers. I was talking about this story. I got a couple of guys coming in that blew the whistle on this situation down a VA down in North Carolina years ago. But it's an interesting story about government waste and whistleblowing and corruption and the veterans that were injured as a result of all that. I consider myself really fortunate to be able to be involved in that, this kind of interview with these caliber of people, really. It's fascinating stories. But the last thing he said, if you're going to blow, I said, was there any fee? What advice would you give to somebody in a similar situation looking back? If you were going to look back now and you know, with that experience, what advice would you give yourself? He said, make sure you know what you're getting into. Now, for me personally, I did know what I was getting into and set that up to protect myself as best I could. Ultimately, they still got to me. And that's a story in itself, but it's not really the point of what I'm discussing today, that the laws there offer little to no protection. And it's very unlikely that anybody's going to come to your rescue, very unlikely that they're going to come rushing in with black limousines and cart people off for these crimes of mass destruction. As a matter of fact, it's unlikely that anything at all will be done. That's the status of the laws. The number of these complaints, when you add up state, local, federal, semi-government agencies, the military, it's huge, 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 huge. Many thousands every year. Thousands of reports of corruption and wrongdoing, and some of it pretty doggone egregious. And the way it's handled is just insanely bad. The process to go through, this is another real problem. There's no whistleblower court. Like I said, there's no department of the whistleblowers to come rushing in and help anybody out. None of that's going to happen. There's no real due process at all. You go report it, and then you come to find out that the regulatory agencies are highly politicized. What? No, get out. You're telling me that people don't do the right thing because of politics? All the time. All the time. Every doggone day. And one of the things that I realized in doing all this is the difference in the way that veterans think. And in the series of these interviews, from the Vietnam veterans to the guy shot in Afghanistan to the whistleblower down in North Carolina, and connecting all these dots in my own experience, it's crazy. It's crazy. Looking at what happened on Iwo Jima. There's stories there that we uncovered that have never been told, never shared from that perspective. I'm really proud of that work, by the way. I'll just say this as a side note. Teddy Daniels called me after the interview with him. He's the guy that got shot in Afghanistan, caught on helmet cam. And he said, Chris, of all the interviews I've ever done, I never had an opportunity to do an interview like that. And I'll tell you, I got lucky. Two weeks ago, I didn't know how to do an interview like that. I got really lucky. I got interviewed for a station out in Buffalo, two stations. And the guy interviewing me, the site is called LimaCharlie.com, I'm pretty sure. Loud and clear, I guess that's to mean. And he was kind enough to interview me, and they're going to be broadcasting that at some point. I'm hoping to get the links here soon. I thought the interview went well. But anyway, this Army brother basically taught me how to do interviews. I've been sitting here doing a monologue for 6 years. I don't know how to do an interview. And so I go to, this Project Chaos is very interview heavy. And the first two, I really struggled. Thankfully, they were guys from my unit, and it worked out just fine. But I was like, man, that's not going to be a good tempo. How do I do this? Well, I got lucky, the grace of God, I guess you could say. But anyway, it's interesting how you look at all these different eras, Afghanistan, Vietnam, myself, the Gulf War, World War II, Iwo Jima. Everybody will tell you the same doggone thing. And I realized in all this, you know, why all this is so important to me. I don't care if people agree with me or not. And it's not that I don't want people to agree with me. Of course I do. I mean, you know, I don't sit here and be argumentative or create disagreement necessarily. But I just want the truth to be taught. I mean, you make up your own mind as long as it's based on the truth. And you would think that there would be a common perception of that. But the other thing I noticed, I started to say, this is very much different thinking that most veterans have. And it's not that no civilians think this way, because that's not true either. It's just that most veterans do think this way. I think disproportionate to the population. What is that? Well, it's certain principles such as, I think I mentioned, a duty to intervene, an obligation to report and not be complicit. And the retaliation for veterans comes as a huge surprise, as we're like, well, what happened here? And then the veterans' desire to genuinely support the common good, even at his own self-sacrifice. Isn't that a good thing? Veterans are used to paying it forward. Then you come out and you're like, what the heck is going on here? And it just creates a lot of frustration. I said to this whistleblower the other day, I said, you know, it's funny to me. You look at anything the federal government is involved in, and it's never truthful, the information we're getting. Cesspool, like the swamp, it's a cesspool. Swamps actually have at least areas of clean water. A cesspool does not. A swamp is murky, muddy water, but it's alive and living. Cesspool is nothing but crap. And that's what our government has become. It's infiltrated our military. It's taken over the media. And it's taken over our colleges and universities by and large. Tell me I'm wrong about that. And so you have all these veterans coming in. And they're coming out. And they come in with a certain set of principles. And one of the other big ones is that I tell the story like this. My son, God bless him. He's an Air Force active duty TACP. I was Marine Corps veteran, right? Marine Corps active duty, combat deployment. Now my son, if you know the story, Victory Over Chaos, the book I just wrote, some Marines got trapped in the city. We fired the artillery to get him out. Guys got trapped in the city. That's the job that my son has. It's amazing, right? And lots of other tie-ins. But the truth was never told about it. But anyway, my son, I'm very proud of. He graduated boot camp, the basic school, and I think what they call the schoolhouse for this TACP program, which is a pretty high level program. And he was the honor grad or the top grad at every level. And the last one, the schoolhouse, when he became TACP, they had this sharp colonel, Air Force colonel, come in to give these new TACP airmen a little pep talk. And my son, to get that honor, that program tracks all branches of prior service as well as officers. And my son beat a Marine Corps recon captain who was not too happy about my son beating him in this program. And my son's a real house, I'll tell you. But anyway, the colonel comes in to give this graduation speech, and he says to these young airmen, he said, one of many things, he said, hey, we're TACP. So when you get out to your duty station, you remember, when we see a problem, we don't just keep walking, we stop and fix it. And I said to my son after that, I said, that's really cool. Hoorah. I'm just going to let you know, well, yeah, in the civilian world, be a little careful with that. They don't necessarily welcome it as much as the good colonel there might. But that's the attitude of alpha males and crack units. They say, oh, it's misogynistic. No, it's not. No, it's not. To acknowledge the beliefs and principles and character of some of the greatest men on the planet is not misogynistic. It doesn't take anything away from women. We're allowed to celebrate what we do, and we can celebrate it in different ways. Why is it that we are always the ones that, oh, we can't talk about anything that, that we do? It's not me I'm even talking about. I wasn't tech. P is his jump wings. I didn't. I didn't graduate honor nothing. Nobody liked me that much. I can shoot well, but that was about it. He's beat me in every way. I'm so proud to say that. I really am. But anyway, the colonel says that. You know, we see a problem, we stop and fix it. We don't just keep on walking. And how many organizations out there really welcome that? Look, I don't know about you. The message is, and like I said to you, it's not just me saying it. I witnessed it. I start talking these stories about something completely different. It just comes out as a side, and everybody's saying this same thing. Every one of them is what I'm telling you, that these government organizations are run where not only are people not doing the right thing, but they become purely attacked for doing it. What are they concealing? You got to listen to the interviews. ProjectChaos.org. I didn't do it to plug that, but there's large-scale problems going on in our government. It's really become a problem. There's no real protection for the whistleblowers. And it's just become this whole racket. I want to take a couple minutes here. We have time. I want to tell you why I got into government and tell you that story a little bit. And not the back end, the front end I wanted to tell you. I never really talked about it. And see, here's the thing, just to give you an idea of my character. This is the Christopher Scott Show. My full name is Christopher Scott Kunkel. I never revealed that for 6 years because I was working in government. I checked the laws on it. There's absolutely nothing illegal for me to publish what I was doing. But despite that, for my own integrity, I didn't feel that it would be appropriate to go out publicly with political content when I was working in government. And so I did it under a pen name. I never did any advertising and no promotion. And despite that, there's been millions of downloads on this podcast and thousands of books sold. It's amazing, really, to me. I decided to go public with my ProjectChaos.org project, which is veterans, war stories, history. And I decided to do it in my real name, Christopher Scott Kunkel, and they fired me a week later. So be it. God is good. And I'm here to tell you that thanks in part to your support, everybody listening, it's going pretty well so far. Not perfect, but it's going well. A book tour about to launch, a new book out, a second sponsor for that, which I'm very excited about. It's going well. It's going well. And, but anyway, leading up to all that, there was a reason that I ended up in that down that path, okay? And just to give you the backstory on that, so I had a really great career in real estate development, land development, home building. We built communities. For me specifically, it was over 55 multifamily at that time. And I built, man, it was like $100 million in 3 year period. It was just crazy, the volume that we were just cranking out. And I loved it. I loved that. That type of work and building new communities and the model homes and finishing out all the homes. And it was a lot of fun. And I didn't necessarily appreciate townhomes. I just ended up doing the multifamily there for a couple of years in the end. Well, then came the Great Recession. And essentially, the positions at my level were just decimated for the most part. You know, companies held on to a handful of the guys that were the ultra loyalists. And I guess I wasn't part of that group. And boom, get cut. And it was a big list of cuts. I mean, just the number of staff reduction. The business volume dropped off like literally 98%. I mean, it wasn't hard to see that there was big changes coming. And it did. The owner of that company, I think, was correct to do it, as much as I wasn't real thrilled about it at the time. Anyway, that also created an opportunity for me. And that is I went out and started my own real estate firm and did that with some partners. And we developed commercial mixed use. We had about 200,000 square feet, I think four or five properties at the top end, a couple different businesses, self-storage. It was amazing what we had going on. And we get into that a couple of years and we had, of course, our ups and downs. It was a turbulent time in real estate then. And on a downswing, one of my partners said, you know, I need an income. And I was kind of burnt out. I like doing the deals, but the property management part wasn't nearly as entertaining to me. And I said, you know what? You can run it for a while. And anyway, I stepped out. I said, I'm going to go get a job, you know, and I'll do my partnership on the side and let that portfolio grow. You know, we'll see this rough patch through and go from there. Long story short of all that, I land a job working for our local town. In the beginning, I was doing like permitting and code enforcement 14 years ago. This is a really basic, I was like on the lowest job, and I really just took it for a year. It's like a transition thing. And I never envisioned myself staying in that, doing it at all. I mean, it was just nuts to me. You know, when I was in homebuilding, I had a huge staff, and it's just crazy. Now I'm like this government clerk kind of thing. You know, it was very humbling, very educational. I saw there's some value in it. And it was good for me because it offered, it's actually only 35 hours a week in the beginning, which was also perfect because I had this big business on the side that I had to run, and it took a lot. And we had gotten sued also, that's right, and we're in the throes of that, which is also affecting us in a big negative way. And I needed time available to deal with that. So anyway, I get into it. Well, I fell in love with it. I fell in love with the serving the public. You see, I had spent my real estate development, home building career constantly fighting with the regulators, the building inspectors. And I used to get so mad, and I was making big money. This is very the humbling part of this. I remember back in the 90s, you know, some stinking $40,000 a year building inspectors are going to come in here and shut down my project. And the way I thought about things then, and now I'm the $40,000. Year inspector, but I didn't even start any kind of inspections related. I was just doing even more basic stuff in the beginning, and it went up to run that department. But what ended up happening is I really fell in love with helping people through that process. And, you know, there was some issues. You would deal with some bad actors for sure, but I enjoyed working with people. You know, helping them get their permits. Can you imagine? I put my cell phone number on my business card. When I first said, you're crazy doing that, there are going to be consequences of that. It was all positive. The people I got to know, the people I got to interact with, they would call me, say, Chris, I'm sorry to bother you, but you're the only one that can get anything done around here. I could show you reports, graph. I took my private sector experience and put that in play, and the production was amazing. It was amazing what we got done. And but that was my point about this is, you know, it wasn't the money, it wasn't the fame and fortune. I was giving up a lot to stay in that field. Now, you know, like I said, at that time, I needed a job and I needed the flexibility, and it worked. So that was my first gain. But at the same time, you know, I got in because I had this passion for it. And here's the other thing I wanted to tell you. Maybe that's where the problem begins. Maybe if you find yourself, because everybody that I find, they tell you the same thing. VA whistleblower, why'd you go to work for the VA? Well, I was concerned about veteran suicide, and I really wanted to make an impact. What happens? You get in this situation. Well, they wanted us to run this program, and we thought it was running well, and then it became clear that they didn't want it to run well. Wow, because somebody genuinely cared. I mean, it seems to me we need more of that in government. But I'm going to say to you from my perspective now, 14 years of it, if you find yourself passionate about what you're getting involved in, I don't know that you want to get into government, man. Because it's not really well rewarded in this day and age. Why is that? That's why we need to listen to our veterans. That's why we need to have more of these conversations. And it's a big reason, you know, why I'm so passionate about this. You know, for me personally, it's fascinating listening to things I'm hearing that went on that these whistleblowers, and in some cases not even whistleblowers, like I didn't really consider myself a whistleblower. I'll tell you what I did. I saw millions of dollars being misappropriated without the proper approvals. When I knew that nothing was going to get done about it, I was going to have to speak up about it. I knew to some degree what I was in for. Maybe not the scale of it, but I knew I was going to get blacklisted. And I knew that they were just going to, everybody was going to be like, arms length. It's like, you think COVID is bad? Become a whistleblower. And it's just amazing how people drop you like a hot potato. It's pretty funny, actually. So I was aware of this and prepared for it. And what I did is I made plans to get a new job. in government, back to a job, and again, that whole story. And I left, and the day I left, I sent an email to the board without any specificity. And I said, hey, there's a problem here you should look into. I received a letter back from the town lawyer, the solicitor, a man whom I know well, worked with him. He says, Chris, we looked into these matters. Nobody else is complaining. Oh, well, I guess that's the test. If only one person says anything and nobody else says anything, there's really nothing to talk about, is there? Oh, I knew there was a problem. So I contacted the media, and it was a complete lockdown. Again, people that I know and had worked with. I was like, wait a minute, I would have called you 2 weeks ago. You would have been happy to talk to me. That part, I was shocked that the media is so look, everything I talk about, you know, I've said this a million times. You think I'm a cuckoo. I've seen this stuff going on with my own eyes. I've talked to others that have as well. They're misappropriating millions of dollars at the local level. So stick with the story. I resign. I send an email. No specificity. They don't do anything. I get a little, I understand their prerogative. Maybe they didn't understand my request. That could be. But when I got the letter back from the lawyer, I knew that they did understand. And I had a good idea what they were going, the path they were choosing. I said, oh. So I go to the media. The media says, we just can't really find any evidence of this. They kind of gave me that kind of approach. Oh, no evidence of this. Is that right? I'll give you some evidence. So I did. 8 pages, I believe. I filed a complaint with the attorney general. Not very helpful. Until we had a tornado come through here, and I did a video that was search optimized to come up in the feed about the tornadoes with a photo of the governor on it. It became a, you know, locally speaking, viral video. They call it the viral video of our town. And that caused quite an upheaval. And then I finally did get a call back from the attorney general. The money was, quote, put back. I don't want to go into that stupid story. And some staff changes were made, but nothing really of any consequence. And the video is so egregious. It really is. And I don't speak in the video. It's all them. I took these different clips of their own words in different public meetings and put it together. And it's not out of context at all. They talk about flip-flopping. They're asking, where is this money? I don't understand how this money vanished. And they just come back and vote and approve the budget with the money, just never explain where it went. And that video finally got some action. And they hate me for that. And the Democrats in this county hate me for that. And word has spread. I believe they're done more and more. And word got back to me. You know, I have my own network. I've been around a little while too. And I'll tell you this. I'll just be up front here. And maybe some of the people are listening. You know, people get nervous about getting pulled into a fight. And I don't have that problem. I have the opposite problem. My problem is I don't have enough hours in the day. I got to decide what fights I'm going to get tied up in. You know why? Because I rarely lose. And I have to say to you, there's going to be some, what shall I say to say this properly? Some emotional discomfort coming as a result of this. Because I am going to be speaking out about it. I'm going to be doing a book tour at the local. It's already happening. I'm going to be at the local veterans organizations around here, the VFWs and the I forget the other one off the top of my head, but people are asking me. Now, I don't do it necessarily behind this microphone, but people ask me privately, locally, what went on. I tell them everything. And the story's getting around. And people know the reputation that I had as well. But word got back to me, this one councilman, his son, ironically, is an Army veteran. The councilman, this guy's like 400 pounds. You know, he's never done a push-up in his life. He's just like a greasy dude. He's, you know, he's an HVAC mechanic who's his quote own business that, you know, he runs out of his backyard and it's just a disaster. And the guy's just a complete slime ball, right? So it gets back to me that he somehow telling people that I better watch my mouth. Watch my mouth. What does that mean exactly? And anyway, I find it hilarious, really, that I'm not going to watch my mouth. And here's the thing. I'll leave you with this. I think they made a calculated error because while I was under their employment, I was greatly constrained in what I would talk about. You never heard me talk about the things going on at work. I never once did. Never. That's all going to change. I'm going to be able to give you this great perspective. It doesn't explain everything, but it explains a lot. Think about what I just told you. The media on a local level silencing me. What do you think's going on when there's real money involved? We're in big trouble when you stand back and look at it, that simply doing the right thing, not only is it not happening, not allowed, but the people trying to do it are heavily, heavily persecuted and pay a huge, huge price. It's not right, and it should be. God willing, I'll be back tomorrow. Sure hope to see you there. In the meantime, make it a great day.